Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from chapter 3 of Canto 1, text 16 and 17. Text 16 and 17 are describing the incarnations of the Lord surrounding the churning of the milk ocean. So there's 22 in this list of avatars. This covers avatar 11, 12, and 13, or Kurma, Dhanvantari, and the female form of the Lord, Mohini Murti. So the translation reads, the 11th incarnation of the Lord took the form of a tortoise whose shell served as the pivot for the Mandarachala hill, which was being used as a churning rod by the theists and atheists of the universe. Purport. Once, both the theists and the atheists were engaged in producing nectar from the sea so that all of them could become deathless by drinking it. At that time, the Mandarachala hill was used as the churning rod, and the shell of Lord Tortoise, the incarnation of Godhead, became the resting place or pivot of the hill in the sea water. Text 17. In the 12th incarnation, the Lord appeared as Dhanvantari, and in the 13th, he allured the atheists by the charming beauty of a woman and gave nectar to the demigods to drink. This is there's no purport for either verse. But the section of the Bhagavatam is quite extensive. And it's found in the 8th canto. And in that 8th canto, there's the description of how the whole churning of the milk oceans took place. One time, Dhruvas Muni, along with his 60,000 followers, were passing along a path, a road, and coming from the other direction was Lord Indra, riding upon his Airavata elephant carrier, along with his entourage. And Dhruvas Muni, being in a magnanimous mood, took off one of his garlands to offer as a token of respect for Lord Indra. And Indra didn't get down from his elephant carrier, rather he had Airavata accept the garland with his trunk. And because Airavata was an elephant, he didn't understand the value of the gift that was being offered, so he took the garland and threw it between his legs and continued walking and stomped on the garland of Dhruvas Muni. So Dhruvas Muni became very offended. And he cursed Indra, that Indra would become bereft of all of his opulence because he was proud of his opulence, so he should become relieved of that pride by being relieved of his opulence. And when the demons heard that Indra had been cursed by Durvasa Muni, they were very happy. That's how it works with lower consciousness. Someone else is in difficulty and makes one very happy. So they came with their armies and defeated the demigods and drove the demigods out of their heavenly realm. Sounds like a repeat of other pastimes. But so Indra, the king of the demigods, went to the abode of Lord Brahma on the top of the Sumeru mountain. And when they came before Lord Brahma, they told them everything that happened. And Lord Brahma decided this is a job for Lord Vishnu. So they went to the shore of the Milk Ocean and began offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was very pleased with their prayers, and he decided to appear before them. When he appeared before them, his effulgence was so brilliant that the demigods became blinded. They couldn't see anything but light in all directions. But slowly, Lord Brahma was able to make out the form of Ajita, particularly it's described. There's Jitta and Ajita. Ajita is a name of the Lord that means he cannot be conquered, or cannot, he's infallible. And the living entity is the opposite. Jitta is fallible. So when the Lord appeared, there's long set of prayers that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva offered to Ajita. Ajita was very pleased with the demigods, and he explained they need not worry. He had a plan, and his plan was, rather than fight against the demons at this point, because Durvasa Muni had cursed Lord Indra, and Lord Vishnu didn't want to neutralize what that curse was. So he said to the demigods, make a truce, and in the truce, you should say, at least for the time being, let us not fight. Let us do something together that will be of benefit to both of us. Let us work together to churn the milk ocean, and from the churning of the milk ocean, many wonderful things will be produced. That was the plan. And in the course of doing so, Lord Vishnu said, many wonderful things will appear from that churning of the ocean. And don't become afraid. Don't become attracted. Just continue, and in course of time, you'll regain your kingdom. Do as I say, and you'll be okay. So they were happy. They went to the demons, made this proposal. In lectures, Prabhupada would describe this is called diplomacy. And the demons would be calculating, and they were calculating, we already have the kingdom, now we can get more than the kingdom, which we couldn't do alone, but with the assistance of the demigods, we can get more than the kingdom of the demigods. And so they made a deal. We'll not fight for the period of time that we're working on a common project. So the churning of the milk ocean was arranged for in the following way. The Mandarachala hill was to be the churning rod. And so Lord Vishnu appeared on the back of Garuda, and he placed the whole Mandarachala Hill on the back of Garuda and brought Mandarachala Hill to the place where the churning was to transpire. And when he had Garuda place the hill there, but he told Garuda that you have to go away because with the churning rod, we're going to need a rope. And Vasuki should be that rope, but he's a serpent, and as long as you're around, he won't come. So you have to go away. So Garuda went away. So now they have Mandarachala Hill, and Vasuki came, and then there was discussion, okay, who was going to take which part of the serpent? So the demons, being in the powerful position of having just conquered the demigods, they decided they wanted to choose first, and they didn't want the tail because the tail is, you know, not a nice part. They wanted the head. So they chose the head, and the demigods chose the tail. But when they were churning, they were getting scorched by the fire coming from Vasuki. And also, as they were began churning, because of the great, I'm going to read a bit, because of the great heaviness of the mountain, the demigods and demons became fatigued, and some of them actually died. So, and the mountain began to sink. So, in order to save the mountain from sinking, Kurma appeared. And so the Mandara Achala mountain was placed on his back. The commentary explains he had an itch. They wanted his itch to be scratched, so he just arranged his pastime to scratch his itch, because how do you scratch an itch in your back if you're a tortoise? So he had the mountain move and scratch his back and forth. Then Prabhupada describes, if there's this ocean of milk and there's Kurma resting the mountain in the ocean of milk, what was Kurma resting on? Follow the question. Because normally if there's something resting on something, one might say, well, the bottom of the ocean. But what's the bottom of the milk ocean? And the answer is, he doesn't need to rest on the bottom of the milk ocean. He's the personality of Godhead. And that's his nature. He's the basis and support of everything else, not that he needs something to base himself on. So, the churning began. And as the churning began, many things came out, and the first thing that came out was poison. Ajita, Lord Vishnu, had said to the demigod, this would happen. But he said, don't worry. Lord Shiva will come and drink the poison, because he's very compassionate. So, as the poison was produced, Lord Shiva drank the poison. Or he held the poison within his throat. And so his throat became blue. And so one of his names is Nilakanta. The goddess Durga, or Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, was not at all disturbed when Lord Shiva agreed to drink the poison, for she knew Lord Shiva's prowess. Indeed, she expressed her pleasure at this agreement. Then Lord Shiva gathered the devastating poison, which was everywhere, He took it in his hand and drank it. A small quantity of the poison dropped from his hands to the ground, and it is because of this poison that there are poisonous snakes, scorpions, toxic plants, and other poisonous things in this world, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. But it didn't stop there. After the poison was produced, the churning continued, and Lord Dhanvantari appeared. Who is Dhanvantari? Dhanvantari? What is he known for? Ayurveda. So he appeared, as you often see the picture, carrying a pot, a kumbha. And within the pot was nectar. And it was a nectar of immortality. So immediately the demigods snatched the pot of nectar. So as they snatched the pot of nectar, Mohini appeared. The most beautiful woman in the world, Bhagavatam describes, just to captivate the demons. And as she appeared, when the demons got possession of the container of nectar, an extraordinarily beautiful young woman appeared before them. All the demons became captivated by the young woman's beauty and became attracted to her. Now, because the demons were fighting amongst themselves to possess the nectar, they selected this beautiful woman as the mediator to settle their quarrel. Taking advantage of their weakness in this regard, Mohini, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, got the demons to promise that whatever decision she might give, they would not refuse to accept it. So the demons made that promise, and then Mohini had the demons and demigods sit in different lines so that she could distribute the nectar. She knew that the demons were quite unfit to drink the nectar, therefore, by cheating them, she distributed all the nectar to the demigods. And then what happened? Who knows what happened? One of the demons disguised himself as a demigod and sat in line of the demigods to receive the nectar. And that demon's name was Rahu. He sat beside the sun and the moon. When Mohini Murti understood how Rahu was cheating, he, or she, immediately cut off the demon's head. Rahu, however, had already tasted the nectar, and therefore, although his head was severed, he remained alive. After that, the demigods finished drinking the nectar, and the personality of God had assumed his own form. This is a long section of the Bhagavatam, several chapters. And lots of things to say about it. One is this form of Mohini Murti that's mentioned in the first canto, chapter 3, that he allured the atheists by the charming beauty of a woman and gave nectar to the demigods to drink. So, Mohini Murti is unique. It's the Supreme Lord in a female form. So even in the purport or in the summary of the chapter, sometimes Prabhupada is using she, and sometimes Prabhupada is using he. She knew that the demons were quite unfit to drink the nectar. Therefore, by cheating them, she distributed the nectar to the demigods. And then in other places, it's he. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead understood how Rahu was cheating, so he immediately cut off the demon's head. So how do we think of the Supreme Lord in a complete picture, like this discussion last night of, you know, A is equal to B and A is greater than C, right, greater than B. The complete form is the Lord and his impotency, or Radha Krishna, or Lakshmi Narayan, or Sitaram, the Lord and his consort is one entity, as the energetic and the energy are one entity. Purusha and Prakriti is one entity. So that one entity can manifest himself according to his internal potencies, however he likes. However he likes. And so, for pastime purposes, he manifests, that's what these are Leela avatars. He's manifesting forms suitable for the pastime. So, suitable for the pastime was the demigods were in great distress because the demons had defeated them. So the Lord appeared as Kurma, for the churning, for his pastimes. And so different things were produced. Then when they were in difficulty because the nectar from Dhanvantri had been snatched by the demons, he showed this principle, the principle that demons are attracted to material beauty, particularly the beauty of the form of woman, and so the Lord took the form of a woman. But it's not like a material form, a spiritual form. So the Lord can manifest as in any form he likes. So certainly he can manifest as a woman, female form, and there is not another example of this, of the Lord manifesting this female form. And she used her female charms to enchant the demons into making the promise, whatever she would say. So then she would distribute the nectar to the demigods. Then there's this long section in the commentary, how it is that Rahu, because in the line he sat between the sun and the moon, how Rahu is the cause of eclipses, particularly lunar eclipses. Because it's Rahu attempting to devour the moon. So one can take it in a wrong way, in a way that our Vaishnava Acharyas take as mundane speculation, that this is, we know what eclipses are. It's a shadow. And the shadow of the earth, the sun and the earth, and the shadow of the earth passing over the moon causes the eclipse. That's what eclipses are, eclipse of the moon. Eighth grade science teaches us that. And the Bhagavatam is teaching us differently. There's another planet called the Rahu, and eclipses, they can be predicted astrologically or astronomically, but it's Rahu attempting to devour the moon. So modern science looks at that as, gee, that's very primitive. But The knowers of the Bhagavatam are not interested in primitive stories to pacify the mind of worldly people or weak-minded people. Even Prabhupada once said, because the moon, the distance between the earth and the moon, according to the Bhagavatam, is so far, maybe they went to Rahu. Because Rahu was in between. He didn't make that as a statement. He was placing it as a possibility. All of this is transcendental lila. There's more that after the churning of the milk ocean and the nectar was produced. There are other things that took place. Other surabhi was produced. So many other things were produced from the milk ocean. Because the verse is speaking about Mohini Murti, I'll mention there's a whole chapter in the eighth canto dealing with Mohini Murti bewildering Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was bewildered upon seeing the beautiful Mohini Murti incarnation, and then he later came to his senses. When Lord Shiva heard that the Supreme Lord has appeared in a female form, he was very interested to see this form. So along with his wife, Uma, and his entourage, he came and he offered obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offered prayers unto him. Upon seeing this form, even Lord Shiva was captivated. Later, by the grace of the Lord, he controlled himself. This demonstrates that by the power of the Lord's external energy, everyone is captivated by the form of woman in this material world. Again, however, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can overcome the influence of Maya. This was evidenced by Lord Shiva, the topmost devotee of the Lord. First he was captivated, but later, by the grace of the Lord, he restrained himself. It is declared in this connection that only a pure devotee can restrain himself from the attractive feature of Maya. Otherwise, once a living entity is trapped by the external feature of Maya, he cannot overcome it. After Lord Shiva was graced by the Supreme Lord, he circumambulated the Lord, along with his wife, Bhavani, and all his companions, and they left for Kailash. So when it's describing that these things were produced, it's more a matter of how they were manifested than they were not in existence and then they came into existence, that kind of thing. Dhanvantri didn't come into existence. And the goddess of fortune didn't come into existence and Surabhi didn't come into existence. It's just a manner of how the Lord chooses to make his appearances in this world. And enact pastimes for his pleasure. He's certainly capable. And he did. There's a couple more details to mention that in descriptions in the of the forms of the Lord, the types of avatars, Dhanvantri is said to bear the opulence of the Lord's fame. There's six opulences of Bhagavan, and both Ramachandra and Dhanvantari, in Prabhupada's purport, he describes that they're manifesting a particular potency, the potency of the Lord's fame. Dhanvantri is also a Shaktyavesh avatar. That means he's a living entity who is bearing a potency of the Lord. And that potency is, along with fame, he's manifesting knowledge of the Vedas. The Ayurveda is part of the Vedas. It's not in pursuance of the Vedas, it's part of the Vedas. And it is so because Veda means knowledge, and part of that which the Supreme Lord supplies along with creation is knowledge of how to use the creation. So the body has these four problems: birth, death, disease, and old age. And so the remedy for disease in the form of medical care, medical attention, is provided by the Supreme Lord within the Vedas, and Dhanvantri is the bearer of that. For which he's very famous. So these are three forms. I'll read the verse again. Two verses. The 11th incarnation of the Lord took the form of a tortoise, whose shell served as the pivot for the Mandarachala hill, which was being used as a churning rod by the theists and atheists of the universe. In the 12th incarnation, the Lord appeared as Dhanvantari, and in the 13th, he allured the atheists by the charming beauty of a woman, and gave nectar to the demigods to drink. I'm going to be traveling shortly, so I'm going to end shorter class this morning. See if there's any comments or questions.